Devil We Know contains graphic content and intense subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. Everywhere we look, everywhere we go, every city, every town, every neighborhood, every street, there is a devil we know. This is Devil We Know, and I am your host, Aaron. It was the spring of 1983 when Danny and Mary Gingrich decided to move their family from Norwich, Ontario, to a 150-acre farm in Crawford County, Pennsylvania. The Gingriches decided to move to Crawford County because Pennsylvania didn't have government-enforced regulations on dairy farming like Norwich did. They were the first Amish family to settle in what was later known as the Brown Hill Settlement. This settlement consisted of about 100 people and consisted of about 26 other families, which was considered normal as most Amish settlements had about 25 to 35 families. In all, Mary and Danny had 11 children. While 11 children may seem excessive for an average American family, it's a common size for an Amish family. In fact, the Amish were often encouraged to have large families, not only because they didn't believe in using birth control, but because they needed strong boys for life on the farm, and daughters to help with gardening, food preparation, babysitting, and household chores. An average Amish family has between 5 and 9 children. While families with more children aren't unheard of, all family members were expected to follow the Amish Ordnung, which is the social and behavioral rules that follow the Amish way of life. The Ordnung varies between different Amish communities as the rules and guidelines are all mutually agreed upon between each community. If a person fails to follow the Ordnung, they can be shunned from the Amish community, and most of the time, they will never be able to return. One of Danny and Mary's sons, Edward, Ed, or Eddie, to his friends and family, was always known as a misfit of sort in the Amish community. Born in 1966, he enjoyed learning about mechanics and technology more than an Amish person probably should have, and absolutely loathed going to church every other Sunday with the rest of the Amish community. An Amish church service is very different than your traditional church service. While the Amish only go every other Sunday, the service can sometimes last up to 3 hours. The services are always held in Amish homes, usually in the basement of a home. In addition, there is great preparation in getting ready for a church service. The family that will host church is always planned ahead of time to give the family time to clean their home and basement and to prepare food for the after-service meal. Most Amish people enjoy going to church, much like they enjoy doing their daily chores like working on the farm, yard, or house. The Amish would awake very early in the morning, usually around 4 a.m. Men are the primary money earners in the Amish communities, while the women worked odd jobs, including running fruit stands, small bakeries, and quilting. For Ed, this wasn't the case. He despised doing his chores as well. Ed had to work at his father's sawmill, which was known simply as the Gingrich Sawmill. Sawmills, logging, and other forms of carpentry are very popular in Amish communities. The wood that they process at their sawmills goes on to become beautiful forms of furniture, flooring, pallets, and other materials used for construction. Ed would commonly have conversations with the English people that came into the sawmill to purchase different items. The Amish referred to all non-Amish people simply as the English, regardless of what nationality or ethnicity they were. They were all the same in the eyes of the Amish. It was frowned upon to have anything other than an exchange of pleasantries with the English. Any lengthy conversations above what was minimally required to conduct business was highly discouraged, and sometimes cause for censure. Despite being warned regularly about these unnecessary exchanges, Ed persisted. The English way of life was something that both intrigued him and left him with a longing for more. Ed couldn't hide his fascination with their technology and their modern conveniences. At the age of 16, all Amish youth began what's called Rumspringa. The word Rumspringa is Pennsylvania German for running around. The teenagers start to socialize with friends on the weekends and after chores and go to each other's houses. They will also start attending youth gatherings, which are usually supervised by an adult Amish. Amish people don't date each other. This is the time when Amish teens get to know each other and start looking for a spouse to live the rest of their life with and start a family. Once an Amish person gets married to another Amish person and joins the Amish church, their Rumspringa is then over. Levi and Emma Shetler were an Amish family living on a 300-acre farm where Levi was a dairy farmer, and Emma took care of their 16 children. Emma, Enos, Lovina, Levi, Lydia, Katie, Marie, Mary, Andy, Barbara, Clara, Daniel, Drusilla, Elmer, Emmanuel, and Noah. In the fall of 1985, Elmer Shetler and his wife, Saloma, welcomed their second child into the world. Elmer asked his little sister, Katie, to stop by his and Saloma's house once a day to help Saloma with the newborn baby and their two-year-old son, Samuel. Katie was 21 years old and helped raise her younger siblings and had spent a lot of hours babysitting children of all ages. She agreed to help her brother and sister-in-law. Elmer and Saloma's house was located next door to the Gingrich sawmill, and that is where she locked eyes with Edward Gingrich. Ed walked over to Katie and introduced himself, which started the process of Ed and Katie getting to know each other. Ed would walk over to Katie's house once he was done with work at the sawmill and Katie was done with her daily chores. Katie fell in love with Ed rather quickly, some say too quickly, and Ed felt pressured to propose by Katie and his family members. In the fall of 1986, just 1 year after meeting, Ed proposed to Katie. Even though Ed and Katie had only been seeing each other for 1 year before Ed proposed, this is very common in the Amish way of life. Amish families are always continuously pushing their children to meet their future spouses and begin families right away. They planned a wedding date of December 2, 1986, and told their plan to Katie's uncle Rudy, who was the town bishop. The bishop is the head person of a single church and or community. There are very few men who want to accept the position as bishop, as it is known as a blessing and a curse. Though they don't make final decisions, the bishop does decide which issues should be voted on in the community. He also administers discipline, baptizing, and marrying new members. On December 2, 1986, Uncle Rudy performed the wedding ceremony of Katie Shetler and Ed Gingrich. Amish weddings aren't a whole lot different than American weddings. There are no rings exchanged. However, there is a big all-day party with food, dancing, and singing. However, from the very beginning, Katie's parents never really had a good feeling about Ed. According to them, something always seemed off with him. After 10 months of marriage, on September 20, 1987, Ed and Katie's first son, Daniel, whom they would call Danny, was born. It was clear from this moment that Ed had very little interest in being a dad and didn't embrace fatherhood like so many other fathers do. In the summer of 1988, Katie noticed an even bigger change in Ed. He never wanted to get out of bed and was very quiet. Katie chalked it up to just being a phase that he was going through. On March 21st, 1989, Ed and Katie's second son, Enos, was born. Ed had the same reaction to Enos as he did Danny. He didn't really enjoy being a dad. He told Katie that he didn't want any more children. When Katie told Ed that she was pregnant for a third time, he was clearly not happy about being a dad again. On March 13th, 1990, their third child was born, a girl this time, who they named Mary. Ed and Katie's relationship continued to deteriorate. They would often fight, and sometimes the fights would become violent. Family members would comment that they would see bruises on Katie, but since the Amish believe in handling family issues in-house, no one ever asked Katie where the bruises had come from. Ed started to tell Katie that he was having doubts about the Amish way of life and wasn't sure that he was made to be an Amish person. In the spring of 1992, Ed's depression got a lot worse, to the point where he had started hallucinating and hearing voices. He started seeing things that weren't there, including people and giant rabbits. He even jumped out a second-story window at one point to escape the hallucinations. One day, Ed had a complete mental breakdown. He started howling like a dog and spitting. Seven men, including some of his own brothers, had to hold Ed down and restrain him while a person ran to an English neighbor's house and called 911. Once the ambulance arrived, they had to sedate Ed to be able to treat him. At the hospital, he was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic. He was given modern medicine that a doctor prescribed to him, something that the Amish didn't believe in. The Amish took a more holistic approach to medication and believed in using plants, herbs, and teas to treat different illnesses. Not all Amish communities believe in curing all illnesses with folk-type medicine. Especially today's Amish will go to a doctor's office when they deem it necessary. A lot of the natural treatments are passed down from family to family and are shared with others in the community. While the modern medicine helped him with the voices and hallucinations, Ed still felt very paranoid. He also didn't like how the medication made him feel. He would describe to others that they made him feel like he was living in a fog. Other people in the Amish community would later say that it was like there was no life behind his eyes. He was just blank. Because he disliked how the medicine made him feel so much, he decided against the advice of the doctors to stop taking the medication. Almost immediately, the voices and hallucinations returned. Ed befriended an Englishman who told him that Katie was the devil and was trying to take his soul. The man, Dave Lindsay, tried to convert him to a born-again Christian. Dave was a member of the Bible Believers Baptist Church, and he thought that he was called upon by God to save the Amish men. The day after Ed had this conversation with Mr. Lindsay, he awoke being absolutely obsessed with religion. He started being taken to numerous holistic doctors to try and help him with the hallucinations and voices he had been hearing. He would later go to a chiropractor named Merritt Terrell. The voices and hallucinations only continued to get worse, as did Ed and Katie's relationship. He continued to believe that Katie was the devil. Ed continued to use folk-type remedies, including scalp manipulations or petrissage, molasses to cleanse his blood, along with other plants and herbs. Katie kept to herself and wouldn't talk about Ed's sickness with other members of the community or even her family. The Amish don't believe in divorce, and she was determined to make their relationship work. Katie continued on with her everyday life, including working in the garden, something she loved to do, and caring for the children. Ed would frequently speak of suicide, stating that it was the only way to make the voices stop. He continued to hear voices throughout the day, which also caused him to have trouble sleeping. He would make comments that God and Satan were fighting for his soul. Ed's skin would continuously tingle, and he would have a blinding light in his eyes. Ed continued to treat Katie poorly. He would yell at her, hit her, and it's believed that he would stay out late at night with English women, though this was never proven. On the morning of March 18th, 1993, Ed went to see Merritt Terrell at the chiropractor's office for treatment, which included a scalp massage. Mr. Terrell would finally tell Ed that there was nothing more that he could do for him, and sent him home with a small bottle of herbs. I will be right back after this quick message.
Hi, this is Minna from True Crime Finland. Finland, so peaceful and quiet. There isn't even any crime there, right? Wrong. Join me every 2 weeks in discovering the dark side of the Land of a Thousand Lakes. From legendary and infamous to the lesser known and forgotten Finnish cases, the podcast will be sure to offer something for everyone. Find True Crime Finland wherever you get your podcasts.
A wedding was expected to take place later that day for Noah and Lovina Hertzer. Katie told Ed that she thought he was too sick to attend the wedding, and that his brothers would be taking turns caring for him while she and the children took the horse and buggy and attended the wedding. This pushed Ed over the edge, and he came unglued. While Katie was at the kitchen sink, washing dishes and humming a tune, Ed came up behind her, and when she turned around, and he punched her in the face, causing her to fall to the ground. Ed continued to hit her while Katie yelled out to their eldest child, Danny, to go get help. Danny ran across a snow-covered field in his bare feet to Ed's brother's house. Danny told his Uncle Dan to come quick, Dad is hurting Mom. Uncle Dan jumped on his horse and headed to Ed and Katie's house on horseback. Meanwhile, at the Gingrich house, Ed was still beating Katie. He had gone and deliberately put on heavy work boots just to injure Katie, and this is exactly what he did. He lifted the work boots and with the added weight stomped again and again on Katie's head. He then stopped stomping her and went back to punching her in the face. This was all happening while Enos and Mary were in the house, although it's unclear how much of the actual murder they saw. While Uncle Dan finally arrived at Ed and Katie's house, he jumped off his horse and ran to the doorway. Nothing could have prepared him for what he saw. Ed had Katie pinned to the floor with his knees and was throwing punch after punch at Katie's face. At this point, Dan was afraid for his own life and ran to the English neighbor's home to ask them to call 911. While the paramedics and police were being dispatched to the Gingrich home, Ed wasn't slowing down anytime soon on his assault of Katie. He took a paring knife from a drawer in the kitchen and made a 7-inch incision starting at the top of Katie's chest all the way down to her abdomen and started cutting out each of her internal organs and placing them neatly in a pile next to her. Once police arrived to the Brown Hill settlement, they saw Ed walking down the road with his 3-year-old daughter in his arms and holding the hand of his 4-year-old son. When police stopped him, Ed admitted to killing Katie. He was immediately handcuffed and placed in the back of a police car as the police found suitable care for Mary and Enos. The EMTs and ambulance crew were told not to enter the home until police arrived. Once police arrived, the scene was unlike anything they had ever seen before. One EMT even vomited when she saw the scene because of how gruesome it was. Police and EMTs saw Katie's unrecognizable body laying on the floor, naked, with half of her skull missing and all of her internal organs piled next to her. Her clothes were laying in a heap in a corner of the kitchen. Back at the police station, police were interrogating Ed about what happened that night. Ed was holding a piece of fabric from Katie's dress tightly in his hand. He was convinced that they could still save Katie, even after the police told him multiple times that they couldn't help her anymore, that she is dead. Ed tells investigators that he had to kill Katie because she was the devil. At 28 years old, Edward Gingrich becomes the first Amish person to be charged with homicide. Here's the questioning of Ed by State Troopers Lloyd and Bay. Trooper Lloyd, Ed. Ed, do you know what a tape recorder is? Ed.
Uh-huh.
Trooper Lloyd, this is a tape recorder. We're going to tape what you're saying. Do you understand that? Ed.
Okay.
Trooper Lloyd, I explained to you, and I read you that form that says you have the right to remain silent and whatnot. Do you remember that? Do you understand? Ed shakes his head no. Trooper Lloyd, you do not? You understand that the stuff you say can be held against you about what went on today? Do you understand that? Ed.
How do you mean?
Trooper Lloyd, well, things that you say could be held against you in a court of law. You understand that? Ed.
Yeah, and religion.
Trooper Lloyd, and religion. Law and religion, yes. And that you have the right to an attorney? You understand what an attorney is? Ed.
Yeah.
Trooper Lloyd. Okay, and you understand that you have the right to an attorney, and I explained to you that if you cannot afford to hire one, then the courts would give you one for free. Ed.
I know what you mean.
Trooper Lloyd. Okay, so you understand that. Ed.
Yeah, but in our religion, we will not have done that.
Trooper Lloyd. In your religion, maybe not, but we have to go by our law. Ed.
Okay, the law.
Trooper Lloyd. We have to go by the law, and the law says I have to tell you this. Do you understand? Ed.
No.
Trooper Lloyd. You have the right to an attorney. You understand that? Ed.
Yeah. What I'm thinking, my mind is confused. I'm going to tell you that right now, but the reason we don't use the number, the Social Security number?
Ed pauses. Trooper Lloyd. Yeah? Ed.
Because of the beat. The beat's somewhere. The computer.
Trooper Lloyd. Right. Ed.
In fact, we feel we can track our minds.
Trooper Lloyd. Okay, but let's get back on track. And back on track is that you understand what I've explained to you on that piece of paper. Ed.
Yeah.
Trooper Lloyd. I've explained that you do not have to talk to me if you don't want to. Ed.
Yeah.
Trooper Lloyd. And you understand that. Ed.
Yeah.
Trooper Lloyd. Okay, now I know you've told myself, and I know you've told Trooper Bay enough times, but I want to try to understand this one last time. Exactly what happened, why you killed Katie, explain that to me again. Ed.
Because for some reason, I just felt, what is going to happen after we die?
Trooper Lloyd. We don't know that. We only presume that we are going to heaven with God, and will be with God the rest of our lives, after we are. Trooper Bay interjects, for eternity. Trooper Lloyd, for eternity after we have died. Trooper Bay, is that what your bishop tells you? Ed.
No, I'm so lost. I just don't know what. I'm lost.
Trooper Bay. Why don't you explain to us why Katie had to die tonight? Ed.
For some reason, I think we could still save her.
Trooper Lloyd. No, we cannot. I've seen Katie, and we cannot save her. Katie is dead, and you know Katie is dead. Ed.
Yeah, I know. Why did I kill her? I felt it was a gain.
Trooper Bay. A gain for who? Ed.
A gain for us, the people.
Trooper Lloyd. All the people? Ed.
Yeah, not just my religion.
Trooper Bay. Why? Ed.
Because if I can get back on track, it will come yet.
Trooper Lloyd. Okay, maybe you can explain why you felt you had to remove Katie's brain and work your way from the brain down. Explain that to me. Ed.
You know how we, the human beings, were made?
Trooper Lloyd. Yes, from the top down. Ed.
That's right. I had it in my mind that if I worked from the top down... I'm so lost. I don't know what to say.
Trooper Bay, but why Katie? Trooper Lloyd, how did you get Katie's brain out? Ed.
I knocked it out, didn't I?
Trooper Lloyd, but why Katie? Ed.
She was my wife.
Trooper Lloyd, yes, but why did she have to die? Ed.
I don't know, but I thought she was trying to get me.
Trooper Lloyd, do you need some help? Ed.
No, I have to get my mind back. Now, what else? What other questions do you want to know?
Trooper Lloyd. Well, I want to know why you felt that Katie had to die. Where did you get the knife? Ed.
Somewhere in the kitchen there.
Trooper Lloyd. And the children were there when this was going on? Ed.
The children cried to start with, but then I must have pulled my hair out. I think I'm gaining, but I'm losing. You know what I'm saying?
Trooper Lloyd. Ed.
That's what I'm doing. I'm actually losing, because I think I have to try to find myself.
Trooper Bay, are you sorry for what happened to Katie? Ed.
Yeah, but I can't cry. I wish I could cry.
Trooper Lloyd, why can't you cry? Are you sorry for what you did? Ed.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Trooper Lloyd, have you forgiven yourself for what you have done? Ed.
That's my problem. I'm trying. I can't forgive myself. I haven't come down to that yet. Ah, gee, I never, ever thought I'd get messed up like this. We'll have to counsel over this. Sleeping is my problem.
Trooper Lloyd, did you ever dream that you were going to kill Katie? Ed shakes his head no. Trooper Lloyd, did you ever dream you were going to kill anybody? Trooper Bay interjects, when did you decide that Katie had to die? Ed.
When my hair started prickling.
Trooper Lloyd, well, Edward, I think it is time you get some sleep. Okay? Ed.
I would like to talk a little longer. You are getting me back on track.
Trooper Lloyd. Okay, sure. Trooper Bay. Have you ever done this before? Ed.
Have I ever done this before?
Trooper Bay. Right. Ed.
You mean kill somebody?
Trooper Bay. Yeah. Ed.
No.
Trooper Bay. Then how could you do it this time? Ed.
I do not know. Maybe it is anger.
Trooper Lloyd. Were you angry at her? Ed.
Yes. I just seemed like, everything that she was just working against me. Do you know what I think? It was me. It was me. I was going backward instead of ahead. That's what it seemed like.
Trooper Lloyd. But now Katie is dead. Ed.
Yeah. I feel like I did. I don't know. Now I'm starting to realize I did a criminal offense.
Trooper Lloyd. Yes, you did. Trooper Bay. Do you remember killing her? Ed.
I remember, yeah, and I thought I was doing a good deed. I mean, I thought I was responsible to do it, you know? I cannot believe I did something like that.
Trooper Lloyd. Edward, I think it's time we took you to the jail so you can get some rest and some food. Ed.
I have to talk to myself some more. Why did you take my fingerprints?
Trooper Lloyd. Well, that's just part of the law. Anytime. Ed.
When you were doing that, I was suspicious of you. I thought you were...
Trooper Lloyd, I could feel that. Ed.
Because my nervous system is out of whack, is what it is.
Trooper Lloyd, our law says that when somebody is arrested for a crime, we have to take their fingerprints, and we have to take their photograph. It is just part of the procedure, Edward. We're going to have to go. Ed.
I'll just try to sit it out. I'm going to have to get out. This is not going to slow me. Well, They don't want me at home, do they?
Trooper Lloyd, no, at this stage, no. But that's not an option open to you at this stage. Ed.
I'll try to sit my time out in prison.
Trooper Lloyd, okay, it's time for us to go. In March of 1994, Ed's trial began. Ed was represented by defense attorney Donald Lewis at his homicide trial. The state of Pennsylvania was represented by assistant district attorneys Douglas Ferguson and Wes Rowden. After all testimony was heard from both sides, the defense and the state of Pennsylvania, the jury found Ed guilty of involuntary manslaughter, but mentally ill. A lot of people hoped that Ed would have been found not guilty by reason of insanity, because this would mean he would have indefinite hospitalization. If this were the case, Ed would have been in the mental facility for the rest of his life, where he could be monitored and required to take his medications. Instead, Ed was sentenced to 2.5 years to 5 years in prison. He had already been in jail for about a year, as he was awaiting trial, so he was given credit for the time he had already served, and was ordered to serve an additional 4 years. He was released from prison on March 19, 1998. Ed spent some time in Evart, Michigan, at an Amish-run mental facility. Word was that he did well there and continued to take his medications and stay on the right path. The Brown Hill Settlement had shunned Ed and didn't want him back in the neighborhood. Mary, Danny, and Enos were living with Ed's parents. Ed was forbidden from seeing and even communicating with his children, but he missed them. He especially missed his 17-year-old daughter. Ed and his brothers hatched a plan to kidnap daughter Mary just so Ed could see her and spend some time with her. He was so desperate to see Mary, he would do whatever was necessary to see his daughter. On the night of April 18, 2007, Mary was riding in a horse and buggy with her aunt when a man jumped on their cart and took over the reins. The man drove the buggy to Ed's brother Atlee's barn, where the doors were closed and Mary was forced to leave in a waiting car where her father was expecting her. Mary was later found in a desolate hunting cabin. Though she was terrified, she was unharmed. Ed was charged with the concealment of the whereabouts of a child and interfering with the custody of a child. On December 5, 2007, Ed was sentenced to 6-month probation and he had to pay a $500 fine. Brothers Atlee and Joseph were initially shunned by the Brown Hill Settlement, but made a deal with the brothers that they would be unshunned from the community, but only if Ed leaves the area, which they agreed. For the next 3 years, Ed bounced around between different mental health facilities. Because Ed was convicted of a felony, he was not allowed to possess a firearm for any reason. In February 2008, a neighbor near the place he was living at the time called the police and stated they had seen Ed hunting with a rifle. Ed admitted to the violation without going to trial, and he was sentenced to 3 months in jail. In 2010, Ed moved in with an attorney friend of his, George Schreck, and his wife, Stephanie, at 27912 Miller Station Road in Rockdale Township, Pennsylvania. Ed would help George and Stephanie with the different chores of their farm. Mr. Schreck stated that Ed was always a hard worker and never gave him any trouble. On the morning of January 14, 2011, George had gone out hunting for the day at about 10 a.m. Ed told Stephanie that he was headed outside to feed the horses. At about 3 p.m., Stephanie had realized she hadn't heard from Ed in a while or seen him, so she decided to go looking for him. At 3:18 p.m., Stephanie Schreck called 911, stating that Ed had killed himself by hanging himself from the rafters of their barn. At 44 years old, Edward Gingrich had committed suicide. The only note he had left was, quote, "Please forgive me," end quote, written in dust on the top of a bucket of horse treats. Ed's family reached out to the Brown Hill Settlement and requested that Ed be able to be buried next to Katie in the local cemetery. The Amish agreed. The Amish stated that they did it out of respect for the family and that they have never hated Ed. They were just afraid of him. Now that he was dead, there was nothing more to fear. Ed's brother, Atlee Gingrich, moved into Ed and Katie's home with his family. Ed's children are now grown. It is unknown if they have continued the Amish way of life or not. Ed Gingrich is still the only Amish person ever to be convicted of murder that we know about. A lot of times, crimes are handled between the Amish communities without ever being reported to the police. It may be easier to hide the activity of a bedeviled killer when everything is handled in-house, but the unease will always pervade. No matter the neighborhood or community where we live, there's always a chance that we'll find a devil we know. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can find Devil We Know on Twitter at Devil We Know Pod, Instagram at Devil We Know Pod, Facebook at Devil We Know Podcast. Today's story was researched and written by Kate Morris, edited by David Young. Please tune in every Sunday for another episode of Devil We Know. If you could please leave a 5-star rating and a nice review on iTunes, I will shout you out. All you need to do is screenshot it and direct message me on Twitter at Devil We Know Pod. Please leave your name and where you are from.